Hello and welcome. We are back with the Power Suits podcast, episode 8. Are we on episode 8, Katie?
Are.
I am joined, as always, by the one, the only, the fabulous Miss Katie Kay. How are you today, Katie?
Good. How are you, Francie?
I am good. I'm taking a break from playing plumber slash handyman slash repairman so we can record this podcast because, as you said, I am the epitome of proving who needs a man.
Yep. Francie's ripping her walls out as we speak, and she doesn't need a man.
I'm just going for it. So I'm taking a break because we are far due to discuss a ton of topics. We have so many different topics to discuss. It's only been a little bit over a week, but I feel like a lot has happened in the world, in the news, in business, just across the board. So I feel like we have a ton of topics to get into. So I think we should probably just jump right in. All right, what should we start with? Should we go back? I guess we should possibly start with the Met Gala because we foolishly recorded this right before the Met Gala last week, so we kind of missed out on discussing it. You've probably heard from everywhere else, best dress, worst dress, like all that fun stuff. What I wanted to more so discuss was, one, the internet was talking all about how the Kardashians were not invited. That was like the talk. It was on Dumois, it was everywhere. And who is on the red carpet? None other than Kim Kardashian, Kylie, and Kendall Jenner. So all three of them were there, who are typically the three staple I consider Kylie and Kendall Kardashians when we talk about the Kardashians, but typically those are the three that were there. Last year was the first year we ever had the entire kind of Kardashian clan. So I find it really interesting. And, you know, there were sources close to the Kardashians confirming they hadn't got, Kim hadn't been invited, and she was really upset. And then there she was. So my question is, do we think it was PR to try and, you know, make more buzz about the Kardashians being there? Or do you think it was just a rumor and they were just like, just let it be. We know we have our invites. We know we're going. How would you, like, if you were Kim Kardashian, which way do you think you would have played that?
I think it was either heavily thought about, heavily strategized on when they were going to release that they were going, et cetera, or, and I think it kind of has something to do with the filming of their show as well, because I don't know if it was the one first season or second season of the new Kardashian show, but they were getting ready for the Met Gala.
Yeah, it was on the last season. I don't remember what, maybe that was the second season, but I remember it being
filmed,
being
right?
Discussed. Yes.
Yeah. So I think that, yes, what goes on behind closed doors, we will never know, but I think they are smart enough with their brands and they work very well with these individuals that it could have been strategized. Or, like, I also think it's kind of obvious why it was Kendall and Kylie and Kim. Like, Kylie, you're always strategically inviting her because of the level of her brand. Kendall's the fashion one. And then Kim is like the OG. You're going to always invite Kim. And, like, don't know if this caused more business issues for the other two sisters, but, like, I could see the dynamic from that episode that we watched, or the season we watched before that, where it was like some of them didn't want to go, some of them wanted to go.
I think Chloe loves to not go.
Yeah, she doesn't want to be in the limelight and in the spotlight. And like, does that affect all their brands when one sister doesn't want to participate? Or
I don't know, but I know Chloe is happy not to be there from what we saw last year. And I think that Courtney will only go where Travis goes. So if Travis is going, she will go. If Travis is not going, she's not going, because that's Courtney. And I quite frankly don't think Courtney really cares if she has a brand or not.
I agree.
I do think, though, because I love the Met Gala. I always, every year, I'm like obsessed with the fashion. So I'm always like watching the red carpet, just very interested. And I was purposely checking, can't, like, all of the Kardashians, checking their stories. Where are they? What are they posting? And I found it crazy that Kim was posting no pre-Met Like, I'm in New York City. We're traveling to New York. Nothing. There was just one post where it was a room and it was all decorated and it said like Met Gala. And she was like, look at what North did to celebrate the Met Gala, which still could have been back in Calabasas, California. Like, it still wasn't a dead giveaway. Oh, they're in New York, where Kendall, you saw kind of out and about in New York. But I feel like Kim really leveraged, everyone thinks I'm not being invited. I'm going to show them when I show up to the red carpet, and here I am. So I thought that was very interesting. The other thing I wanted to touch on, no influencers this year. In the past, Addison Rae, Charli and Dixie D'Amelio, there's been some of those very, what I would call top tier TikTokers, you know, top tier influencers. And this year, none of those individuals were present. So I also thought that was very interesting. Is Anna Wintour, the fashion world, Vogue, making a statement of like, no, this is for fashion only.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting.
I don't think it's smart to do that. I think that that might be a little bit of not wanting to admit like where the times are going. I think that TikTok and fashion go hand in hand. And it just because that's the new media outlet that people are using. And, you know, yes, it's different and it's modern and it's not what we're not in print and runway and doing all these things. That's what converts. That's where the users are sitting. So personally, I think it's not a good idea to do that. But yes, I think she probably just said old school fashion only.
And the other interesting thing I want to talk about this year, the theme was Karl Lagerfeld, who used to be the head designer for Chanel and also had his own brand. So everything was very like Karl-esque, Karl inspired. There was three people that dressed up as cats on the red carpet. Two of them only meowed. One of them was Doja Cat, which was kind of funny, but they only meowed. I didn't appreciate it. I didn't appreciate those outfits at all. But one of my usual favorite attendees of the Met, Blake Lively and Ryan Reynolds, were not there. And supposedly they were among a group of celebrities that were boycotting the Met this year because of statements Karl Lagerfeld had made of being disgusted by fat women or fat people in general and thinking like the iconic woman needed to be skinny and he didn't even want to look at people that were overweight. So there was apparently a group of celebrities who declined going for that reason, which makes me very interested to see, do they get reinvited? Do they now get axed off the list? Do they, you know, what happens now? Because can you just be like, I don't support who the Met is focused around this year, so I'm not going.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with them. I probably wouldn't want to support it either, but like it's kind of like the Oscars too. It's at what point do we hold the organization to a standard to kind of set the bar? Right. And so if you're then going to punish people for their choices and believing, well, then we don't live in the free country we think we live in. So if I'm Ryan Reynolds and I'm Blake Lively and I say, no, I don't want to go. And then it's a brand punishment. It's a non-invite going forward. You know, at some point, when are we going to hold these societies, committees right to the standard they should be at, right?
And then you also wonder too, are some of these people not going just because they have kids or they have families or they have stuff going on? And then it's being seen in the media, they're not going because of their non-support, right? Because you just don't know, which I think it's just very, to me, it's like very interesting, very hot topic. Obviously, it'll take us a whole nother year to see what changes or shifts or how it goes. But I remember, I think we talked about on this, is Kim Kardashian really not invited to the Met? And is like that such a huge change? And are they not relevant anymore? Well, now we have our answer. She was invited to the Met. She was there. Clearly she's still very relevant. You can't kill her. Much like the cockroach that was running up and down the red carpet that was highlighted because nobody actually wanted to touch the cockroach. Clearly it's a cockroach, but this cockroach made it all the way up the red carpet at the Met Gala. Shout out to that cockroach for making its appearance at the Met. And I'm just going to shout out my favorite best dress of the whole night. Never have I ever given it to a male, but Bad Bunny by far killed the red carpet. I just thought he looked so amazing. Okay. I loved his suit. He was in an all white suit. The back of the suit jacket was cut out. So it was like backless. And he had this, I don't even know what you would call, like wrap made of like white roses, but it was this long, like train like wrap that he kind of just had like over his arms of like these white roses. And I just thought he looked, I mean, got, I feel like there's only so much you can do as a guy. And I just thought,
he's rocking it.
I just thought he looked like class act, like not like, to me, he looked not like somebody you would call Bad Bunny. He looked like right. a very distinguished, like debonair. To me, it was giving so much Karl Lagerfeld vibes with all the white roses, but still looked very like modern. And so I just was like, snaps for Bad Bunny, because I just thought he looked, and rarely am I like, oh, I think he's attractive. I don't know, but it, on the red, it just was all working. It was all working. So I just wanted
to Google it. But yes, you're right though. Like it's so hard with, oh, even the back is a, wow.
See, the back is like open. Like it just.
Yeah. You guys, if you haven't seen it, go Google it, because I hadn't seen it. But you're right. Like it's so hard with the men. There's literally only so much you can do. And that's like,
I mean that, and then Jared Leto was literally in a cat costume, like a full head. Cause they were all Chopette or whatever. Karl Lagerfeld's cat was that like everyone knows. So he was in like the cat mascot with the head outfit. So that is the Met. We will move on, because we just had to touch on it, but I think we can all say that Kim Kardashian is not irrelevant. She's still very much so relevant, whether people like it or not.
Can't kill the Kim brand.
I feel like it makes sense to next, since we're just talking about Ozempic and the Met Gala, or we're talking about the Met Gala, it makes sense to next talk about Ozempic. We're talking about celebrities.
Right into that one.
Right into Ozempic, because I want to discuss my very mixed feelings on Ozempic, so for those of you that don't know, Ozempic is a diabetes medicine that has now also been approved for weight loss, medical weight loss, and you have to get a prescription for it. So you can't, it's like, you can't just get it over the counter. And please, for the love of God, if you know someone that is diabetic, don't be stealing their Ozempic injections. There's also a bunch of other ones. I believe they are called peptides. There's like always, there's the brand everyone knows, which is Ozempic, but I want to say now there's three or four other brands, and it is becoming incredibly mainstream to the point of multiple housewives now have come out and been like, I'm doing Ozempic. I want to say half the cast of New Jersey has publicly said it on Watch What Happens Live. When I scroll on TikTok, I'm now seeing multiple creators doing lives talking about being on Ozempic or one of the other, you know, Ozempic-like products, and talking about their side effects, their weight loss journey, what it's done for them. And from what I've heard and researched, the why people are losing weight on it is it's an appetite suppressant. So one of the side effects is it basically just suppresses your appetite, where, shocker, if you don't eat anything, you're going to lose weight. And, you know, some people are seeing very, very dramatic results. Now I've also been getting served on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, and just the internet in general, ads for these different products, where I can go online, click this ad, I can put in my information, I can tell it how much I weigh, how much weight I want to get to, click submit, schedule a virtual doctor's appointment. And if that virtual doctor approves me, be approved for Ozempic. and I'm getting served the ads pretty, and I mean, I'm talking about it a lot with people.
Yeah, you've searched so it. Yeah.
I understand like why I'm getting served the ads, but I'm not going to lie, where I'm a fairly intelligent person. I know enough to know, great, this might work. I might lose 15 or 20 pounds, but then like, you're on it. You can't just stop because it's suppressing your appetite. So if you stop, your appetite's going to come back. You're going to eat, you're going to gain the weight back. It's not a permanent solution. Could it be beneficial for people that are like morbidly obese? I'm sure. But am I also smart enough to know how to fill out this form and say what I need to say to get a prescription? And am I sure, are there doctors out there that are just writing the scripts to write the scripts? Because that doctor's making its money, making his or her money either way, right? Yeah. Like whether I need it or I don't need it, they're getting their incentives to write the script or getting paid, however, you know what I'm saying? Like it's not really to them. And I'm not saying every doctor is like that, but I feel like this could be creating and putting a lot of issues out there in the world for you look up to people, celebrities that are very, like some are very open, some are not open, but everyone's accusing them of being on it. And is it just creating this thought process for so many young men and women or middle-aged or any age man or woman to just be like, oh, I'll just do that. And that's the easy way out. And what other health problems is it going to cause? Now, if I'm Ozempic, y'all have chef's kiss to your branding and marketing ability because so many people are taught. I mean, I must've had 4 different conversations about it in this past week with different groups of people that are all talking about it. So everyone's talking about it. Whatever your marketing model, influencer, whatever is, it's working. And I feel like for one of the first times ever, people are publicly saying, this is what I'm doing to lose the weight. Where I feel like so many people for so long are just like, oh, I'm eating healthy and working out really hard. And you're just like, 2 months, 2 months. You're eating healthy and working out and 2 months you lost 25 pounds. Like, no, it doesn't work like that. And so I feel like people, it's one of the first times people are publicly talking about it, but is this going to cause a lot of issues?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard. We are obviously not doctors, disclaimer and all of that good stuff. But I think that 2 points to put. Everybody will always pay for the fast gratification. They will always pay for the faster Wi-Fi. They will always pay for the, you know, whatever's going to get me the result the fastest if they know it's going to work. So it's definitely getting huge ammunition behind it. One, because it works. Short term, however, is it healthy, not healthy? Don't know, not a doctor. But you have people coming out and talking about it. These are all people with very large brands and none of them are in the health and fitness industry. I'm sure there is some that are out there talking that are in the health and fitness industry, but you're talking people who basically they look up to, that they stare at, that are all beautiful men or women who have said, you know, I've struggled to lose these 10 pounds or 5 pounds or whatever. And they're talking about, well, then I did this and it worked. The only thing that also scares me, and you touched on it, of like, okay, it suppresses my appetite. And then what basically, right? Then I go off it. Then is it healthy afterwards? So the concern I have is like, what's the health problem that's coming from the fast gratification, right? So it's like, we have kids that have social issues because they live on their phones at a very young age. So it's okay to give the kid the iPad because they stop crying. But in 10 years from now they can't go on a date because they are socially, or they can't go out with a group of friends because they're socially awkward, right? So what is the 10-year problem that do you think big pharma and these drug companies care about? Absolutely not.
No.
And then the physical problem of like, if you're going to go have gastric bypass surgery or like any of these, like where they're shrinking your stomach. I mean, to an extent, I think you'd be able to hold off a lot of the weight if it was like a big drastic difference, but you're going to have to, because I think your stomach would shrink. But at some point, like, unless you remove that tissue or remove that piece of your stomach, it's not going to go down to a size that's that's going to keep you at the weight. So is there more mental health issues? Because then now you've gained another 5 pounds, and like we could go on forever, but it's the foreseeable problem that will come, one, and you know, prescription or no prescription, everybody's going to get around that part. So,
and I just think the way I see it is we're teaching people how to be anorexic.
Yeah.
We're essentially saying we're going to give you medicine that's going to teach you. And like, listen, I do fully understand and believe there are people in this world that are at a weight point. They have medical issues where it's not just diet and exercise. Like I fully understand that and know that. And there is like a use case, but like, I think I'm a perfect example of, yes, I could be thinner. I could certainly be thinner. There's plenty of people that are way thinner than I am. I could also be a lot heavier too, right? Like I could definitely be a lot heavier. I'm not at like a morbidly obese point, right? So I am like that candidate of like, yeah, let me just do Ozempic. And I feel like I fall into the category of a lot of the celebrities or housewives or women that are like, nobody would look at you and say you're fat or you're overweight or you need to lose weight. Could you if you wanted to? Sure. And still be healthy? Absolutely. But nobody's like, oh my God, like fatty, right. Big daddy, we have a problem here. Right. But then you're going to take those individuals where it's probably not the best thing to do for your body in the long run that are making it be like, yeah, everyone's doing it. So why not just do it? So I just think it's wild. I also think it's wild how many ads I'm getting served for it. And like I've said, because I'm like, wait a minute, this is like, because it's not Ozempic, it's one of the other ones. I'm like, is it really this easy? And I click to see like what the process is, and I can see what the process is, and you would have to do a Zoom call and or some kind of tele, but you also know you just got to say the right things. And I guarantee you, you can Google, you can chat GPT. What is my height? Like, what is my age, height, weight have to be to qualify to be on Ozempic? I'm sure that is a prompt you could put in to get the information to know what you have to feed into the system to say the answer to get what you want. And it's wild to me because I look at how many issues people already have with health, with addiction, with everything. And it's just like, we're just creating more.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that part's never going to stop, but it's going to be a worse problem down the road.
It is. It really, really is. I feel like for our next topic, we should now jump across the pond. Because I feel like this is something that was not nearly as talked about as it probably should have been over the weekend, but it is the royal coronation that mm-hmm. took place that I'm going to say nobody's talking about. The coronation not heard around the world.
It's because we just loved a woman in power. It's the one place where a woman was in power. Oh, kidding.
Not untrue.
I think, okay, there's multiple things, and I'm gonna keep my opinions and my British opinions out because not needed. But I think one, the coronation is huge, right? Like, and I was talking about it with actually Kay, our other partner in the suit.
I was gonna say, the only way I even remembered it happened was a few people I know that are in the UK had posted things on social media.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. So we do have like in the foreseeable future, two very big kind of coronations that'll be coming up. And I think that younger generation, I think that's gonna create a buzz. I think with the past of the royal family and everything that was going on. And then you also like you're stepping in to massive shoes, like whether you like the king, whether you don't like the king, I think regardless, the buzz was never going to be the level of like, could have been Queen Elizabeth's birthday and the whole city would shut down. So I think that he already had been in the royal family, done things within the royal family, I think that honestly made a big impact into the buzz. My second point would be, which I was talking to a few people about, it was the royal family in England is always going to be the royal family. It's always going to be a big thing. It's a massive part of the culture. But are we kind of over it? Like, have we gotten to an era where, like,
well, do we, I don't know, what is the sentiment of people, your family is back, like, what is the sentiment of people in the actual UK? Because I know in America and Americans, they just didn't care. The biggest thing that was circulating was a meme where it was a photo where somebody's floofy doofy feather was blocking Harry's face. So it was the irony of Harry's there and he's standing in this picture, but you can't see him because some man's floofy doofy feather on his hat is literally blocking Harry's face. And that was like the
breaking news in America.
That was like the thing I saw the most in the US. And it makes from an American perspective, I think that most people don't care for him. Everyone loved Diana. There's all the speculation surrounding that in the world. I think so many people, you know, you heard all the stories, or at least in America, it was very widely talked about how they couldn't get a musical artist to confirm playing the coronation, which that's like a once in a lifetime thing that you get invited to do, and people didn't want to go. So I think there's clearly something with him where I feel like when he passes, and then it goes to
William.
I was like, why am I drawing a blank? I'm like, it's not Harry. It's the other one.
I'm William. So excited for William and Kate. Like,
then
so,
I think, then I think it's going to be like, oh, it's William. What's that dynamic going to be like between him and his brother? Are they speak? Like, I think there's always going to be that kind of thing to it. But I think just nobody really cares about the current king. I'm sorry, Sir King, but.
And I also think it's like, we know, like, reality is his age. We know he's not going to be our king forever. Like, within my lifetime, William and Kate are going to have their coronation. Like, that's all going to happen within my lifetime. And probably not, unless, knock on wood, something God forbidden happened, their children, right? So I technically would see two more coronations, maybe, right? So I think it's also like, I think he kind of already screwed up his career, I guess, is the best way to put it. Like, he's already done his damage in his career. He's already done his success in his career, however you want to look at it. And people are like, well, this is just a temporary hole. It's not something we need to celebrate. Our
we're
money's
on pause.
Again. Yeah, we're on pause because
still family on pause.
Yeah, this guy's going to be gone in a few years. That's the reality of it. And when that day happens, you know, we're going to bring in the new era and that will be the new royal family. But you asked me earlier, like, as far as like family and people in the UK, very much my older family, still, they were talking about it. They were excited for it just because it is such a big thing. And like, even with the royal weddings, like, I always woke up, recorded them, was on watching. We did a huge thing for it. So it's kind of just part of like your culture growing up, and you do very much respect it. But like, there's the Canadian girl in me, the reality girl in me who lives in North America, who is like, the royal family really doesn't do anything. So as much as we idolize and we look up to this like statue that we have, and we're the largest family and all these things that like culturally we should believe in, I can understand why it was kind of just overlooked. For two reasons, royal family, yes, is on pause. It's kind of a relevant coronation. And it's not like big change is going to happen or things are going to happen. So. He's like, next, don't care.
The royals are on pause and they're not experiencing a brand up moment. They are definitely not a brand up at the moment. And I don't, the funny part is I don't even know who ended up being the musical performance guest. Like, I don't even know.
He looked miserable too. He looked like he was like having the worst time of his life.
It's wild. It's wild, but we had to discuss it. All right. I'm trying to think of which topic, cause we still have so many more topics to discuss about. Maybe Which topic should we jump to next?
We have to do pump at some point.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's jump there. So we're talking about the coronation being a flop. Let's talk to pump also being a potential flop or in a brand down moment, if you will.
Yeah. So for those of you who don't know, Lisa Vanderpump owns three restaurants in Los Angeles. Three? Four. Three.
Oh, hang on a second.
Sir. Villa Rosa.
Villa.
And Tom. Four. Four. I think it's four. And with everything going on, there was also a rumor going around that her mansion was being sold. This was prior.
It was on the market. It was on the market.
It was on the market. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Not as in, yeah, she could be upgrading. Who knows? But when we say this story, it will lead us into our talking points. And it just came out that Pump was closing their doors, which for those of you who don't know, they always say Villa Blanca is where you take your wife. Pump is where you kind of go with the gays. And, Sir is where you take your mistress. And this is like, has always been her like ideology. And then Tom came out and it was kind of like a blended male.
Who do you take to Tom? It's funny because
you Tom.
Hang on a second. I've heard this before, but it's really funny you just re-brought that up because of everything going on now, how it's like you take your wife, you go with the gays, you take the mistress. It's just really funny.
Yeah.
That you just said that. Okay. Continue.
Continue. And yeah, we don't know who you take to Tom, the Toms, I guess. So that has always been kind of like her brand and her vision behind the restaurants. And the reason I said that was because in her statement of them closing the Pump restaurant, which we can see that it's due to the lease, and clearly they don't want to renegotiate the lease because the rent's been put up like crazy. She mentions that they are still going to do their pride there, which if you do watch the show, they do the big pride event. Lisa goes out in her car and everything, and all the staff come out. So, I mean, as a woman who supports LGBTQ, I can understand why she wanted that to be such the strong message, because she does have a big following. They all go to Pump. They love Pump. So I just don't know. Because we know the things about the house, because we know other things, like, is there something going on and is there a reason why? Because I mean, I can understand rent going up, but rent going up to a point in which you're going to lose your restaurant, it kind of means the restaurant wasn't as successful.
That, I mean, all I can think of is all I hear in my head right now is James Kennedy, more Pump teenies. They need more Pump teenies. That's all I can think in my head.
They need DJ James Kennedy to be DJing there, and the sales go up.
Maybe they need to have him on a see you next Wednesday instead of see you next Tuesday over at Sir. I don't know. A couple of things. One, you know, as business people, there's only one reason you shut the door. You shut the doors to something when the numbers don't work. When financially it costs me more to run that business than I make money from that business, then you shut the doors. If the business is making money, you don't shut the doors. You sell the business. If you don't want to run it anymore, maybe you get another equity partner that wants to take it over. But if you have a business and that business is making money, especially, I might feel differently if it was like they're selling all their restaurants or something, because it would just be like they don't want to do it anymore. Yeah. But it also isn't just them. It appears to be there's like a kind of small group of kind of Lisa Vanderpump's, you know, tight-knit crew that you see managing those. They have, I think it's two places in Las Vegas now. So, you know, her brand brings people in. The things they do bring people in. If doors are shutting, it means the numbers don't make sense anymore. Now, did the rent exponentially go up that much to where the numbers don't make sense anymore? Did they have some kind of a crazy deal where they got a really great price and then it ballooned at some point after so many years? Maybe. But I think there is a bit of, call me crazy, there's a bit of a financial crisis there. And after what we saw last week on Vanderpump, nobody can convince me to believe that Lisa was not suspicious that there was some kind of something going on between Tom and Rachel Martell. As the producer of the show, as the show, I think she's a producer, it's her name, like, as it basically being her show focused around her businesses and whatever, I'm now convinced she was aware of what was going on, whether she knew or suspected, and how all of this went down was in an effort to pump the life back into the businesses, especially because I did see something online. It was copies of a filming permit at one of their apartment buildings. And the filming permit was for February through April.
Oh, so they had the permits prior to any of this coming out.
Yes. Now, could somebody have made a fake permit? Could somebody have doctored that? Quite possibly. But that is also why and how they picked cameras back up so quickly. I mean, Katie, you deal in construction, you know, build things, you deal in business. Have you ever seen a permit acquired that quickly for anything? No.
Never.
And the news broke, cameras were back up in days. And I was like, it would make sense for permits to have been done, not necessarily had any filming schedule, but had it and been at the ready for something to have gone down, knowing that you're gonna finale in May, okay? Your reunion is scheduled in April. Just, I think Lisa knew, I think they completely were sitting there like, let's be ready at something could go awry at any time and let's just be ready. And I think Lisa told Ken, had Ken walk into the kitchen, drop the bomb. He literally walked in the kitchen and said,
it's so obvious.
Can you believe that Tom had Raquel stay at his house the other night? So strange. And exit the kitchen. Like, come on. Let's at least have a conversation. I mean, it's also editing and whatever. But I'm just convinced that I think Lisa has a little bit of, there's some financial struggle going on. I mean, listen, in the restaurant industry as a whole, it's a tough industry to make money.
It is not, California.
It's not an industry you go in being like, I'm going to make a lot of money. Most restaurants fail. Okay. Now you put majority of the restaurants are in California. It's already hard in restaurants. It's even harder to make money in the state of California. Now you add on top of it, as we know, food costs are going up, rent costs are going up, staff costs of everything are going up.
And you just came out of a pandemic where you were in California and everything was shut down.
So I'm not implying she has done anything like shady or scandalous to be having some financial struggles or there's something financially going on. I think by virtue of the businesses she's in, the industry she's in, where she's in them, that she probably is just financially struggling a little bit. And I think this Tom, Ariana, Raquel thing was like, this is the gas we're going to throw on this fire and try and see if we can get this engine revving up again. Because we talked about this, I think, on episode one. The biggest benefactor is, you know, everyone is going to her restaurants looking for the people.
Yeah. And I mean, we know in business, like she seed planted, if she knew, she seed planted it perfectly. If there was a financial issue, she was thinking about how can she use this to her leverage and to her advantage. This woman has been on reality TV, not just this show. She has been on Housewives. She knows how to play a part when she needs to play a part.
Leverage.
And, you know, especially when her businesses are involved and she is on TV, that means there are a lot of eyeballs on you, not just the people you know. So I think It also said in that statement that they were just going to continue doing the Vegas restaurants and that they were continuing to open up more in Vegas or through MGM. I don't know if that means in different spots. But like sometimes when one thing kind of dies, you just have to pivot to the.
And I think Vegas is clearly the hedge or other properties like that. Cause you're, you have people coming in, you know, and they're look like Vegas obviously was also hit by the pandemic for sure. But they were like, how do we get people back here?
Yeah.
Right. Like they were in a place where it's like, how do you get people back here? Most often casinos tend to be in jurisdictions that are going to be more favorable pro business, where, you know, California is not the most pro business thing to be in. So I think she's definitely struggling financially. I think she threw her own gas on her own fire, which good for her, because any very smart, savvy business person would probably be doing the same exact things that she is doing. So
take the lesson from it. Take the lesson from it in the sense of like, here's a big business with a lot of eyeballs and a brand attached to it. When something is about to happen, how can you leverage the situation to build your business or your brand? Even the simple factor of prior to the scandal, prior to everything, she always had James play on a Tuesday. Vanderpump always airs on a Wednesday. Because on Tuesday night, they're all posting about this episode that's coming out and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that builds up way more ammunition. And then people come in because they just want to come see James. And then you're not going to watch the episode.
I'm sure James started playing on Tuesdays because it was probably a dead night for them.
Exactly. So she took her Tuesday dead night and said, okay, let's take the crazy cast member who at the time when he came in and started See You Next Tuesdays, like she couldn't have trusted him to DJ every Tuesday. So let's take something that's dead and revive it. I think one of her mistakes maybe in her brand and everything is Tom Tom does amazing because of the cast. Sir will always do amazing because of the cast. And while you saw Villa Blanca was always shown a lot on The Housewives, and that's where all the housewives would go and they would have lunches there, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that kept the buzz there with Pump. And other than when they do the Pride Parade, you don't really see Pump. So if there was a tidbit of something she could have done, maybe it was getting more cast members in there, trying to have filming time in there and thinking of those things. Because the reality is this woman is thinking about that. She is a producer of the show. She is thinking, how can we benefit from our businesses and our brands, which ultimately the entire cast is going to benefit.
Which is why they went to Vegas. And she did the dinner in the location in Vegas and hosted them all, paid for the hotel, whatever, the show, whoever paid for it. But that's why. It's not just because I'm going to send you somewhere and it's going to be fun. It's then we're going to actually film. We're going to be in the restaurant and it gives that exposure, right? And so she's smart. She knows what she's doing. And I think it is interesting, but like I said, I think it's the nature of the business she's in. I don't think she's having financial struggles because she's done anything crazy, which might then lead to our next topic. I think it's a perfect lead-in for, I think somebody who might be in financial trouble right now as they're getting a divorce is Kim Zosiak and Croy Bierman.
Yes.
Who recently filed for a divorce. And I think they are on the opposite side of the spectrum of Lisa Vanderpump. They have been on reality television for a very long time, as Kim started on Real Housewives of Atlanta. She ended up meeting Croy while she was on the show. Croy and Kim had their own show. Was it Don't Be Tardy? That was her song she put out. Harlem does not like that show. She is not a fan. And now they are filing for divorce, and the speculation is it is predominantly over financial issues. Now, is it over financial issues because they still love each other and care about each other, but if they get divorced, the burden falls on one versus the other, and then maybe they can still salvage something? Or is it financial issues and they're fighting because they hate each other now, because that ends up being a reason most couples split up. But at the end of the day, I think they are in the scenario they are because they overspent to have a lifestyle to be on television that they couldn't actually afford.
Yeah. And I, when she met Croy, he was still playing, was he not? Or he had just retired, or
I
there
think,
was a couple of years and then
he retired. he was still playing. He was still a NFL player. He hadn't retired yet. He was still a player.
And I think, like, just from watching that, and Don't Be Tardy was one of my favorite shows to watch, because I just think they're just ridiculous and great television to watch. But you could see, once again, the stories were saying, watch the money and watch how this flows. They meet, he's still playing for the NFL. And prior to this, Kim has her two daughters, but she's living in a townhouse. She is on The Real Housewives of Atlanta, but she doesn't have, you know, massive wealth by any means. She then meets Croy. They then get married. They then move into the mansion in Georgia. And I think it's the first season of Don't Be Tardy where he doesn't get re-signed, but they have Don't Be Tardy, right? So now you have more money. You have a show. You have a show on your own. It's just your family. It very much is the...
They're super big family.
Yeah, they're a huge family.
How many more kids did she pop out with him? She already had two girls, right?
Yeah, they have the twins, and then... So 2, 4, and then two. Yeah, they have 6 kids. And so every episode or every like season, it was like there's another set of kids coming. And it was a funny show to watch.
They should have named the name of the show Don't Use Contraception, because clearly,
And then got a sponsorship, and then they wouldn't be in this predicament. So you can see then, like, their wealth has gone up. Their wealth has gone up, but they were always the people, specifically her, who wanted the big house, who wanted the cars, who wanted the this, who wanted the that. The very last season that they had even aired was them going on this like road trip, and like they rent this RV and they like travel around and everything. They look at houses in Arizona. And that was my first initial instinct of, why are you looking at houses in Arizona? Knowing full well, okay, it's finally caught up to them. And financially, they're in this spot and they still have a spending problem. It's like the common, and not just them, like the common sports athlete problem is they make all this money, they start spending, or their partner starts spending because they've never seen this money before, nor have they worked for it. And when that tap turns off and you're still spending, eventually the bathtub runs out of water,
right?
And I think they finally hit that road. We heard about the rumors of their house going into auction. And then she was coming out being like, my house is not going into auction. But her stories every day were her posting racks of clothing and shoes and like kids' shoes. And she has this whole closet website where you can go and purchase like 10 pairs of Gucci kids' shoes that have never been worn. So you can see the spending problem, and now we're trying to fix it, and now we're trying to save our house. Fast forward to right now, and then right now we are at the divorce because there's a tax issue. Because you can be broke and lose your house and lose everything, but the tax issue, and now I'm going to relate it to the Girardi issue and the other housewives of, I don't know what these laws are, but this is now the second time of people who I would have never assumed would have got divorced, like could have never seen her and Croy get divorced, could have never seen Erica and Tom get divorced. Is there some sort of way in the legal system of, if we get divorced, there's some sort of financial benefit or protection? And I think in this case over here with the kids, it's probably protection, because if they can't pay it, or it's like the Jersey Shore situation where you have to go to prison or anything like that, where you have unpaid taxes, she wants to be home with her kids.
My thing though is like, and I don't know the number, what is that amount of unpaid taxes that you just can't pay?
1.1. It's in, it, they came out.
With no, but I'm saying like, what is that amount that's like, you're going to jail?
Right.
Or like,
well, Mike was only, Mike, the situation from Jersey Shore was 750 grand. And he went to prison for 8 months or 7 months. Now I watched that whole thing and that whole case, and I think they genuinely wanted to make an example of him.
I think so too, because he did. He, listen, I'm not just saying like you have to show remorse, but I've been in, not me, but through people that either JT has known before, like we've had to provide documents or testimony to people that were being tried for tax evasion. So, you know, I know that process, like I know that, and I've seen people that we've had to provide some documentation for that were pretty much just like, I don't believe I need to be paying taxes, so I'm not paying, like, you know, not like I messed up, like the scenario, the individual that was being tried was not like, I messed up, what can I do, how do I fix this? Where I feel like Mike, the situation was very like, I messed up, which again, you're young or you've never had, it can happen to anyone. Like you just don't know how to manage your money or what to do, or, you know.
I think everybody's done it to a level or a capacity at some point in your life, because that's how you learn about money. So whether it's you turn 18 and you get your first credit card and you don't understand that a credit card revolves you paying back the bank, and you're like, ooh, I'm going to go shopping with my $1,000 limit. And you rack up your $1,000 limit, and then you realize that there's a punishment called an interest payment, or they'll cancel the card. And I think that everybody has to, I think you all, everybody goes through it. The problem is when there's a lot more wealth behind
but
it.
But $1 million.
I know. And their house was only $2 million.
So this is another great segue to another topic I wanted to discuss. I don't even know if I wrote it down, but I just saw this recently where the IRS just came out with its newest, latest and greatest IRS things in the US that it comes out with, but it's talking specifically about entertainment and influencers and the things they must claim, which include they must do a 1099 for any and all free products and items. And I'm just thinking as these influencers that are getting bought, and you got to think they're all posting about it. How easy to audit, right? Because they're all unboxing the free stuff that they get, and 1099 for free trips, dinners, and events.
Oh my God.
And I'm thinking of all those girls that went on that Tarte trip to Dubai where the internet was ablaze with the cost of the flight and the cost of the hotel and the cost of X, Y,
A, B, C, D. We don't want to go to Coachella anymore. We don't want to go on the Tarte trip anymore because we do not want to file a 1099. Just no, for the
we don't, we depends. Stop calling me. You can't send me to Coachella. I will send myself. But somehow I'll figure out how to make it a write-off and a business trip versus having to get a 1099 for the value of the trip.
I do. The free stuff is just, I think, the government taking it a little too far. I do see that as fair.
It is like, payment in a way.
Yeah, you can't be a business owner and be an influencer and hide under this gray area and then.
Because if you think about it, if we're Tarte, right, and we hosted this trip to Dubai, and then we just did Turks and Caicos, and we're going to talk about F1 here in a minute, and I'm hosting all these people, I, as Tarte, the company, I'm writing big checks for those things.
Yeah.
Right? And if I'm Tarte, the company, the checks I'm writing for those things, I'm writing off as marketing. Okay, which typical marketing would mean I'm paying Facebook, I'm paying NBC, I'm paying Google, right? Typically, marketing would be you're paying that money to another business to market your product and service. Well, now my trips and experiences that I'm sure they're line iteming as marketing dollars are now, if they're not giving that value to someone, right? It's not going to a business. It's just a marketing expense.
Taxes have been paid on it and then sent. But then, yeah, there's still a third part
normally
to it.
Normally it would go to
right,
a consumer. Or Google as a line item revenue, or yeah, that money would go to an ad agency as revenue in that agency, or, you know, then that agency is spending it somewhere. So now it's going to an individual.
It makes sense.
As just a free thing, right?
Imagine the influencers though, like they literally just have their PO box on their bios, and like the extra added layer now of I don't want your free stuff. I don't want to put my 1099.
And I could see businesses having to, what is all, because right, if you're a business and you're sending out promotional product, that's a write-off for you. You're sending out product to people for them. And it, you know, you're either line iteming it as marketing, like you're line iteming it somewhere as an expense to you for the amount, dollar amount of the product you're sending out.
That is a business idea. VIP concierge for influencers to like go through and be like, no, she won't take this, but she'll take this. No, she won't take this, but someone go start that business.
And like, what's the value, right? Yes. So I know if I'm taking this, what
am
I
doing? ROI?
Is there valued? Am I making a return on this, right? Or what is the value of this? Okay, is it $100 product? Like, fine. Is it, you know, a higher price? Am I getting a influencer code so I can make money on like a return on the back end? Like,
yeah,
I think it's gonna, if, and I have the feeling the IRS will stand up, those things will stand up because it's the IRS and it's more taxes for the government. And it's becoming a bigger area of people making money. And it is a lot of non-dollars that are being, like we said, the internet was ablaze with the cost of that Dubai trip, right? Yeah. So all that money, and Tarte's been very vocal about not spending money on marketing and putting all their money into these trips to create these experiences, right? Now, I'm not saying Tarte's doing anything wrong, but yeah, that's a lot of free value people are getting. The government wants their money some way or another on that. So I think it's going to be
the government. It has to go government first and then everybody else.
It's going to be very interesting. So I wanted to bring that up. I'm going to now shift to Tarte and other companies that had a lot of influencers at F1. And boy, was there blowback over these influencers going to F1. And frankly, I get it. So I'm not the biggest F1 Formula One fan you will ever meet, but I am aware and knowledgeable of what's going on in Formula One. I'm a fan of NASCAR, all racing, all car racing. I've been a fan of, been aware of generationally, like I've had people in my family that have been like heavily embedded in the racing community. So I'm well aware of, you know, all the different types of racing. Formula One, I am a fan. I've not been as big of a fan because it hasn't been as prevalent in the US until recently. Now it's starting to become more prevalent in the US. I think is a very smart move for the sport because you have more Americans able to go to it, to see it, be a part of it. Going to F1 is very expensive. And there are hardcore F1 fans that will probably never be able to afford a ticket to F1 or afford an experience like a lot of these influencers received at F1. And there was a lot of influencers that people were pissed, knew nothing about the sport, weren't announcing or pronouncing names correctly, were saying inaccurate things in their videos they were posting, where I think brands need to kind of step it up a little bit. And it's one thing when you invite people to the Super Bowl and you're an American company and you're inviting Americans. They know what the Super Bowl is. You grew up watching it. You know enough to not look like an idiot. I think if you're Tarte or any brand bringing people to F1, you've got to educate the people you're bringing to F1 to not make your brand look like an idiot. You need to give them a little pronunciation guide. Maybe you need to do a little explainy poo on how the sport works, who the people are, who the teams
are.
It's
like taking them all to polo. You're taking them to a rich man's sport, first of all, and not telling them how to behave.
Or what's going on, or the important people's or race teams' names and how to pronounce them. I feel like it'd be the equivalent if we took a bunch of people from overseas And we were like, we're going to bring you to go meet Tom Brady. And they all came to meet Tom Brady and they're posting videos with Tom Brady. And they're like, Tom Brada. And it's like, it's not Tom Brada. Who is Tom Brada? It's Tom Brady. It's Tom Brady. How do you not know it's Tom Brady? Because there would be people that are like diehard Tom Brady fans that will probably never have that experience to ever be able to meet him. So if somebody was like, it's Tom Brada, would be out with pitchforks and the lynch mob and you name it, because it's like, you just got to meet Tom Brady and you don't even know it's Tom Brady. You think it's Tom Brada? No, that's, I get it.
So they need an influencer etiquette course for Formula One.
If you want to create that experience, those experiences, I think it's fine. I also am a little bit like,
they are coming with the time though. Like,
why are you at Formula One? You're a makeup brand. Why are you at Formula One?
They're there because Formula One is suddenly a big thing because of the Netflix series, and it's now Tarte is going anywhere they can to insert themselves. But I agree. Why is Tarte at Formula One?
Like, okay, Fenty doing a brand trip at the Super Bowl makes sense. Rihanna's performing at the halftime show. Great. I get it. Tarte at Formula One, it's a stretch. It's a little bit of a stretch. I don't think that was the best move for the brand. It clearly has had negative backlash, which also, as part of the same backlash, a influencer was all over TikTok, who is a African-American girl, saying that her Tarte trip to go to F1 was not the same trip that the white girl influencers were getting, and that she was being treated differently because she was a black girl, which then and she ended up not going because she said, like, I was going to a dinner this night to like the race on Saturday and then was flying home Sunday. Other girls got to go on Sunday and weren't flying home till Monday. And it, like, why am I being treated differently? Because I'm a black girl, so I'm getting the short end of the stick. Now, here's the interesting part. You had other influencers basically saying, okay, you're an influencer and you're getting a free trip and you are now complaining about a free trip that's being gifted to you. So, like, some of the internet was kind of like, you are getting something for
free.
Not
a free gift anymore. It's going on your 1099.
You're getting a gift that you can choose to accept or not. You're getting a gift based on, and I get this, what your influence is. If you're an influencer, the value of your gift, I think, equates to what is the level of your influence. And for anyone that doesn't understand, when it comes to racing, you have one day that is the main race day, which is going to be Sunday. You then have qualifying and you have practices, but those happen on different days. So there, people go to the track usually on Friday, would be like practice. I can't remember if they do practice or qualify, which order. It's probably practice Saturday, qualifying, or practice Friday, qualifying Saturday, the race on Sunday. I hope I didn't mix those two things up, but hey, I wasn't there and I didn't get a free ticket, so I don't have to be the most knowledgeable person on the sport. So there's three different days of things going on at the racetrack, which Sunday is the main race. But if Tarte has a suite or a thing for all 3 days, which I'm sure that they did because there was influencers there each day, they're rotating out who the influencers are in their suite each day to get the max amount of, let's say they can put 10 people in their suite. Now they've got 30 people that were able to be influencers over those 3 days, versus just the same 10 people for 3 days. So at some point you have to pick and choose the A team, the B team, and the C team. And at some, I
where
think
brands need to be careful, and it goes back to like your initial etiquette of going to Formula One. I think where brands need to be careful is these influencers are honestly their own TV shows. So like TikTok is TV to many people, and it's not like you invite Tom Brady and Tom Brady shows up and then he's going on his live stream every 5 seconds, because it's just not what Tom does. These girls or guys live every 5 seconds, going live, posting, making videos. So one thing that goes wrong, one thing they don't like, there's also a risk to paying an influencer to come. So there needs to be like way stronger contracts.
So then the CEO, because the CEO of Tarte, Maureen Kelly, has her own like presence or whatever. She actually made a video explaining, you know, we invited so many girls and all the people we invited knew there was going to be one dinner. Each of them were going to receive one dinner, I think one club night and one race day. So a dinner, a club, a race. But they can't all have the same dinner, the same club night, the same race, right? Like I said, you probably have space all three nights, all three nights days. You can probably fit 10 or 15 people. So you're maximizing, instead of just sending one group, you're sending three groups and you're mixing up dinner, club, race times, right? And she was like, there was never supposed to be a, you know, everyone got those three things and we just kind of scattered everyone across. It's not a, you know, black, white, purple, blue, green thing. And has been very like, we want everyone to have a positive experience. We, you know, I certainly will pay more attention and take more care to not only, you know, our white, our black, our Hispanic, just all different types of creators. And I understand, but at some point it's like, okay, you have 3 days at the race or you have three dinners. And if it's my business and I've got 30 people who said, yes, they can come, I'm going to put my most followed influencers on Sunday.
Yeah.
I don't care what color they are, how old they are, what, like, it's also a numbers game and it's also business. And you're also either getting it for free or being paid to be there. And I really am like, if you really want to go to the race on Sunday that bad, buy a ticket.
Yeah. Which also these influencers are not helping themselves because you're not getting re-invited to come back the second you're, I mean, they can build off that on their channels when they're saying something they didn't like or the Sunday or whatever the case may be, but you're just brand crushing yourself every single time you go against any of your contracts.
Right.
I don't know. I think it needs to be on both sides. It needs to be the brands need to make their contracts stronger. And then on the other side, you know, influencers just need to watch what they say.
Well, now I think it'll be interesting if influencers are going to start to kind of say, hey, maybe I don't want to go on that trip, right? What is the value of
$10.99? I don't want your Formula One trip.
Right. Maybe it's not worth it for me to go on this trip. Or will those trips, right? Because if I'm an influencer, instead of taking me on a trip, I'd rather you actually give me money now to do X amount, which has been against like Tarte's policy. I'd rather you pay me cashola, cash money, for an X amount of number of posts that you're guaranteed over a certain amount of time, because now I'm at least getting the money.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see if Tarte does change their marketing because of the new tax stuff.
So I think it's all very interesting. I think it's also the world, the government starting to be like, hey, there's all these people making money over there. I want to make sure I get my share of the money that they're making.
Well, they are business owners at the end of the day. Like, it was a matter of time.
Yeah. So it'll be very interesting to see how that unfolds. I feel like we might have some more topics, but I also know we'll save them for next time. I kind of did my power suit of the week went to Bad Bunny because I just think he looks flawless. Do we have any power tips we want to share quickly, Katie, before we wrap this episode up?
I don't even know if I have one. I will say, because I last minute had to get on a plane and go to New York and replace one of my business partners, I will say, and I think I've said it earlier in episodes, that you just have to maneuver when everything is going crazy. Just take action.
Change.
Like, everything can be chaotic. All the fires can be going, but whatever the red flashing button is, deal with the red flashing button first, and then make sure to go back to all the auburn buttons and all the green buttons and check on them. Because if you don't, you'll have more red flashing buttons.
My very quick power tip of the week, which at some point on an episode, we are going to share the email with the XOs that I got and the crazy negotiation we just went through for the past little bit, which has turned out okay. So I'll never fully be able to share how sideways things started going. But one thing I want to draw from that for everyone, there's actually 2 points I'm going to make. One, the devil is always in the details. Mm-hmm. And the amount of business owners I deal with on a daily basis that clearly have zero attention to detail scares the shit out of me. That don't read emails, that don't read contracts, that don't just pay attention to simple details and instructions scares me. So I just want to put out there for everyone, pay attention to the details, read the emails, read the contracts, pay attention to the fine line. If you're negotiating with someone and they give you terms, repeat the terms back to them. Or if you understand it a certain way than how they're explaining it, repeat it back and say, am I understanding this properly? The devil is always in the details. Secondly, the other thing I want to say is sometimes you have to pick up the phone. I know depending on what generation you belong to, you either love picking up the phone or you hate picking up the phone, but you cannot always resolve things via emails and text messages. Sometimes it is a 60 seconds on the phone and the problems are solved. So sometimes just bite the bullet and pick up the phone. So those are that is my power tip of the week. I will remind everyone, please leave us a 5-star review. Tell us what you like. If you don't want to leave us 5 stars, as always, you can send that right on over to Daryl and let us know what you want us to talk about. We touched on a couple topics this week that fans had suggested they wanted to hear our input on. So always send us topics. We will touch on them. We will talk about them. If it makes sense, and we can work it into the show. So thank you everyone for listening, and we'll see you next time. Thanks everyone.